experience.
Welcome to the Basement Studios. Welcome back on this lengthy hiatus we've had since the last podcast. Thank you for sticking around and keeping the subscription to what we've got going on. So some big announcements today. Matt has left the show. All good. He wants to spend some more time and focus on his blog, and I encourage people, and I'll keep encouraging people. He does some great things on his blog, and has a lot of cool different ideas that he does with his kids, being, you know, stay-at-home dad and all those great things that go along with that, as well as a lot of cooking and some different recipes that he shares. So you can still check him out at thegoodthedadandthebaby.com. And we wish him well, and, you know, down around in the future, hopefully he will continue to join us and maybe be a guest spot on the show every now and then. So we wish him all the best and are looking forward to moving forward. With that being said, I'd like to welcome to the show as our co-host going forward, Mike. You remember Mike from the episode back, Be the Victor, Not the Victim. So we're really excited to have him. I think he's going to add some great things to our show and bring on some new ideas and some new things that we can do. So welcome, Mike. Thanks for being here. Thanks for agreeing to be the co-host.
Cool. Thanks. Glad to be here.
How's things been going lately? How are the kids?
Not bad. They're kindergarten and preschool now.
Yeah.
Just had parent-teacher conferences.
Yeah, the other day. Went well.
Yep, they went well.
Good.
Eli's awesome for his teacher.
Yeah, cool.
So he's doing good.
He's enjoying school, being back. And
loves it. He's a social butterfly.
Good. He's a chick magnet.
He is a chick magnet.
I bet. He's a cool kid.
Yeah. He got mad at a friend the other day because his friend was teasing him that he had a girlfriend.
What?
Yeah.
I guess that's like, well, you know, that's that, okay. So
he's not supposed to have a girlfriend.
Yeah, well, he's too young for that.
Yeah,
but,
kindergarten.
But, you know, if the ladies are already liking him.
Yeah, this is a second grader, apparently, that likes him.
Whoa.
I know.
He's going for the older women already.
Older women. Or they're going for him.
Smart kid.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Well, that's good to know. And little guy's doing well?
Yeah, he's doing good. He's just a brawler. Just bouncing off the walls.
Does he stand up for his brother ever?
Mm,
are they in the same school? Or
yes, they are in the
schools?
Same school.
Yeah, so do they see each other much during the day or no?
Sometimes they can go down and, like, give each other a high five.
Yeah.
Since the teachers in both classrooms know that they're brothers, so
cool,
and they've been there for a while, so
right, and they enjoy being in the same school and in near each other's grades and
oh,
stuff.
Oh, definitely, but definitely.
Health going okay, everything like that.
Yep,
good.
Yep, chemo's gonna be done in April.
Cancer free for that day.
Cancer free. Oh yeah, we're gonna have a freaking party.
Sweet,
it's gonna be great.
I'll be there.
Yeah, you are invited.
Good, we'll be there.
You and the girls.
Nice, yeah. Cool to hear. So today we're real excited. Been trying to come up with some more show ideas, and I was hanging out with a friend of mine that we were on a trip together for my brother's 40th birthday, and said, you know, it'd be great to have you on the podcast and talk a little bit about your experiences overseas. You'd work overseas for a few years and raising some kids overseas in a different culture that's not typically your own. So, Nate, welcome to the show. Thanks for being here and agreeing to do this show with us.
Absolutely. Yeah, thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
No problem. So, first, we always like to kind of start the show with, you know, what's the makeup of the family? Who do you live with at home? Who's in the family?
Yeah, yeah. My wife and I, we have two kids. We've been married for 9 years, and my daughter Ella is 4, and my son Henry is a little over 1. So he's like 14 months. So we live together, and we've been, as you said, we've lived overseas, and the kids were born while we were. Ella was born while we were living overseas, and Henry was born while we were overseas, but he was born in the U.S. So, that's 4 of us,
okay.
And we're together that way.
Cool. So, overseas, and I might have missed it, and you might have said it. Did you say where you were overseas?
No. We've been overseas a couple times, and we had the opportunity to go the first time back in 2010,
uh-huh.
Before we had kids, and we went to Shanghai, China.
Okay.
And we were there for 3.5 years.
Nice.
And while we were there, Ella was born.
Right.
And that was an interesting, you know, kind of birth. And while we were there, you know, living, she is, you know, she was born early. So that was a little bit of an interesting, you know, kind of a situation. And then we came back, and we didn't know we were going to go overseas again, but another opportunity came up through work, and so we went. And while we were on that assignment, we were lucky enough to get pregnant again. And halfway through the assignment, I found out that we were going to get moved again. So we thought Henry was going to be born in Shanghai, just like Ella was, because that's where the second assignment was. But we ended up moving to Singapore, and Henry was probably going to be born in Singapore. But as it turned out, he came early, just like Ella did. So he ended up being born in the U.S. because we were sort of in transition.
Nice. So I guess the first thing I have a question is what's the biggest difference of having a baby in China versus having one in the United States? Because you kind of elaborated a little bit. There was some interesting experience, but what was interesting about it?
We're fortunate enough to because in China there's sort of two levels of health. I mean, you can mainstream health is basically through university hospitals, and then there are private hospitals. Mm-hmm. And we opted for a private hospital because it had more of the international standards that we're used to for the typical U.S. healthcare. And we went that route for Ella. And so we set up through a hospital there. And most of the experience is pretty traditional. But one of the big differences, I think, is they use midwives extensively mm-hmm. there, which, you know, so as you have that conversation, I think in the U.S. it's a lot less prevalent, but there...
Yeah, it's atypical,
yeah.
I would think.
So there, I mean, they spend, you know, most of the time you would work with a midwife. So that was a big option, right. And that was actually something we did. Mm-hmm. And I found out that... It is actually something that we should do in the U.S. more frequently because you have more exposure to someone who knows a lot more about what's going on the medical side. So that was a big advantage for us to have a midwife to help us through the process and talk about what to expect because Ella was our first child mm-hmm. and questions you should ask and things that you should know about, you know, that there's a lot of things that are in your hands. Which did come in, which was a good thing to have, especially for me being, you know, a guy and being, you know, hearing a lot from other people, but you sort of, you know, yeah, I can handle this, it'll be okay. And then all of a sudden you're in the situation. And for us, Ella came 4 weeks early, okay. 5 weeks early. So that was we were ready, but we weren't
super ready.
All the way ready, yeah. Right. So... yeah, I mean, and now all of a sudden you're standing there, and I can understand why, you know, guys will faint or get lightheaded or, I mean, there's just so many things going on in your head.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Not to mention you're probably not eating because your wife's not eating and you want to be that guy or whatever, right? Or you just don't take a break, right?
Yeah.
That all happens,
yeah.
Too. There's a lot that goes into that, you know.
Yeah, back. I mean, she's like, oh, yeah, go take a break or whatever. And you're like, no.
You know, right.
You're suffering,
Right.
I'm not suffering the same, but
right. I can be there with you. It's not going to be. Yeah, you don't want to leave her alone.
Yeah, but it was. I mean, it was. It's interesting because I think from that perspective, it was unique, mm-hmm. midwife and the way they set that up. But other than that, it's quite similar. Yeah, I mean,
So was the midwife more of like an advocate too for you? Like, did they do some of the middle ground work that like normally we do here?
Like more of an advocate?
Yeah, like an advocate, like
a go between
these people
between
can't
you
come
and the medical
in,
professional.
You know, right now she needs a break or whatever, you know, just being that.
Absolutely.
Not that you had a lot of people there, but you know what I mean.
Absolutely. Yeah, and she encouraged us to write like a birth plan.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know what that was, but we did.
What is a birth plan?
Yeah. Well, I mean, did you do one?
Mm-hmm, but explain it, because
I don't know what a birth plan is.
I mean, it's sort of covers the categories of what you're going to go through
right.
at the birth, and if there's certain things that happen, you answer questions.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's kind of like, you know, basically making a plan for, you know, what you're going to do for an event or something like that,
right.
and you have it all laid out. And it did come in handy
mm-hmm.
For a couple situations where Like, typically when a woman's in labor, and I'm not an expert, but if it's very early in the process, mm-hmm. in the U.S., the hospital will usually have a requirement that you're, there for a certain period of time, and then you're moving on, mm-hmm. So they want you to deliver the baby. They're not going to basically come out and say it, but I mean, there's some pressure. And so they'll sort of speed up the process, and if you get like a epidural, that can slow down the process. Right. The contractions can actually stop or slow down anyway, and so then they have Pitocin. Is it? Mm-hmm. And so they'll speed it up with that, right. And up and down, and you kind of go back and forth, or you can. So there's some things that the midwife will help you, kind of talk about those kind of things.
Navigate through. We did one too, and it was a lot of that same stuff, like. Do you want an epidural? If you want an epidural, when do you want an epidural? Or what kind of things? Do you want a birthing ball? Or do you want...
Right. Like do you want to try everything before you go into an epidural?
And you might have done one and you just don't know.
Well, and for Amy, or, for my wife, she basically went in and saying, I want to... Originally, she said she wanted an epidural right away.
Mm-hmm.
But then she said, no, let's try everything. So we went through all of... But sometimes in the moment... She might say, "No, forget it. I want to go to that." And it's like, stop. Wait, this was your plan,
right.
Like let's so yeah. You kind of feel a little bit more comfortable, and I think that helps later on when you look back at the process and you say, "I'm happy with the way that went," And if God forbid something happened during that, that you could look back and say, "Well, this was our plan. We were kind of sticking to it."
So the plan helped things move along. More fluidly versus just ad-libbing it as you go.
Yep.
Okay, well, the baby's coming. Well, we're starting to crown. What do we do here? Do you want me to hold your hand? What's going on? Where's the doctor? What's going on?
No. Yeah, it was good. And the doctor did come in at the right time, and so Ella was born. Everything went well, and we took her into the NICU for a week because mm-hmm. she came early. And that, I would say, being in China... In a NICU was good,
right?
But in the U.S., probably we wouldn't have done that. So that was a big difference, mm-hmm. To your question. I mean, I think that was something that could have. It was tough. New parents, first week of your baby's life, and you have to sleep in another room.
Mm-hmm.
We were allowed to see her. We were allowed to hold her, mm-hmm. which was a little more than traditional Chinese. Citizen would get to do,
mm-hmm.
so we felt fortunate for that. But it was on a you were on a treadmill.
Mm-hmm.
You had to go through a certain number of health checks. You had to, Ella had to gain weight,
right.
And basically no baby gains weight within the first 2-3 days. It's basically just losing weight.
So it was a lot more structured and just regimented.
And it felt like we were basically in a in a holding pattern,
mm-hmm.
and I couldn't help but think that it was you're sort of paying bills,
yeah.
right? Your insurance company is paying bills, but it's unfortunately to the hospital's advantage to keep you there.
Right.
So there's a little bit of that, but I mean, obviously the health of your child is paramount. Yeah, so you sort of say we're in this. It can be frustrating.
Yeah.
And it was hard. There were some close, some situations where we just walk in and they're trying to feed her, but we were supposed to do that and things like that. But I would say, we got through it and it was only a week. We got to go home. I mean, fortunately, she passed the ridiculous, baby has to stay in a car seat for 45 minutes without crying.
What?
Yeah, I mean, they have to lock her into the car seat. Yeah, at the hospital.
We had people come up where we deliver. We had people come up and just check the car seat and kind of show you what to do.
Yeah, how to stick your kid in the car seat and then go.
But they didn't make them stay in there.
It was like a stopwatch.
Are you kidding me?
It's like, okay, you're on the clock.
What if it was 1 second before that stopwatch?
We were, fortunately, we didn't have
to deal with that. Man. Like, could you imagine you're those parents? Like, you just want to go home. You're like, I'm going to get my baby home today. And then one second, you start crying. It's like, well, we didn't freaking feed her like 45 minutes ago. Or, you know, what if they need to eat? Really? Or they're
wet. I mean, at the end of the day, it's your baby. I mean,
yeah, I guess you could walk out.
If you got, yeah, if you got frustrated enough, just be like,
Well, what would they do?
Well,
it might be a little bit different system.
I mean, technically,
could you just take your baby?
You could. It'd be likely that someone would visit you. I don't know. Definitely somebody would visit you. But I'm not sure what that conversation would be like. But
so you took your child. You know
what time they're napping, so I'm going to put you in there. We're just going to chill.
On the other hand, you know, it's not like Child Protective Services or something like that. So technically speaking, we would have been more likely to get away with something like that there than here. So, you know, there are specific nuances to being there. But I think living overseas, depending on where you are, you're away from your family usually. And you have to make a decision because it's not like, you know, if you're a female and you're working and you're pregnant, you know, if you're going to go home, you have to work for, you know, a month and a half or so from somewhere else while you're pregnant waiting for your baby. Right. And same thing for us. My wife, you know, Amy would have had to come back to the U.S. We would have been separated for a long period of time while I was working there and then come all the way home with the hope that the baby's born around the due date. That's a window of time that can, as you guys know, can be a long window, wide window of time. Yeah, so you either have a really, really, really flexible company or a flexible work schedule. We decided to do it there. But once you do that, you know, you sort of are along for the ride. Whatever the local situation is, that's you have to kind of go with it. We were fortunate because, like, the midwife example, it's good, you know, for that. So, you know, I think every country has their own way. But you know, for the most part, obviously, they are able to, you know, handle that kind of a thing. And there may be advantages, too. There may be things that you didn't know about like we didn't know about.
Right.
And that was good in that situation.
Yeah. That's different, but it's like, you know, some of that stuff is crazy, but I'm sure that if somebody, like you said, if somebody were to have the baby here and not experience whatever, they're from a different culture, but totally different too, you know? So it's just different and new. So, which kind of is a good way for us to lead into the next thing. But so raising your kids in a different culture, you know, how, and they weren't in school or anything yet, right? But how was that, you know, culturally for you and raising the kids and picking up? Because they're learning at such a young age, right?
Right. Yeah. And were you in with other, you know, culturally similar individuals? I mean, were you out just in the Chinese populace or were you, like, more cloistered in, you know, whiteness?
Yeah.
Caucasianness.
It is typical when you're overseas and working that you're sort of in the expat bubble, just, you know, kind of where you are around a lot of people who are there for the same reason. Maybe they're not working at the same companies, but those are groups that, you know, those are circles that tend to work together. And especially in a place like China where a lot of people don't speak Chinese, and obviously, there are a lot of Chinese that don't speak English, so it does help. Or you tend to gravitate towards people who speak English.
You clump up.
You do meet a lot of people from Europe, other states, obviously within the states, Canada, South America. I mean, there's a lot of people, so you do come. It's a very diverse group.
Ohio. Everywhere you go, freaking people from Ohio, man.
We did.
They're ridiculous. Well, they're never in their own state. It's ridiculous.
I think they say the same thing about people from Michigan.
Probably. No, maybe.
I have no problem with Ohio, but...
Yeah, my wife's from Ohio, so that's... I mean,
you better zip it, then.
It's just sorry.
So
you're sleeping outside when you go home after this.
Could be.
Sleep with the fishes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Ella, you know, the second time we went overseas, she did go to preschool. So she went to preschool for a little while we were in Shanghai. And as I said, we got relocated to Singapore, and she had a semester of school there. And I would say raising the kids in a different culture, the biggest advantage was the exposure to not only people who are expats from other mm-hmm. countries, but also the local
right.
culture, you know, the people from, you know, Singaporeans or Chinese when we were in China. And even from Ella's perspective, I mean, she being four, she is young, but she talks about those experiences mm-hmm. now. And when she was in school, the things that she was learning and the things that she was, you know, getting access to were things that she would not hear,
mm-hmm.
you know, absolutely. And I think that's, you know, one of the things that is a huge advantage, especially nowadays. Not everybody gets the chance to be exposed to another culture.
Right.
You know, you go on vacation,
right.
you know, you're there for a little bit, but it's not the same. And when you're living somewhere, you're immersed in that.
Yeah.
And it shows you that humans are humans, no matter where you are, right? It's mm-hmm. the human condition. People are people. And they want the same things out of life that all of us want, more or less. They may have a different way of going about getting it or doing it, mm-hmm. but, you know, when you're removed from that and you're in your own space, you might hear about other people, you might read about it, but it's usually from someone else's perspective
mm-hmm.
with a spin or twist or whatever. And I think it creates a barrier or a sense of like, that's different, you know, and people fear things that are different.
Yeah.
And maybe it's not good when you go somewhere and you see people face to face and you can talk to them,
mm-hmm.
you know, especially in China. You know, being a communist country and the history that exists there for, you know, U.S. citizens, for Americans, depending on when you grew up or what generation you're in, you may have different ideas about what that is or what people do there. I mean, when we left to go to China, I remember asking my mom, like, what do you picture? Like, we're living in Shanghai now. What do you picture in your mind while you're here? And she just described, like, this dystopian,
bizarre scene where you're eating like frog
yeah,
legs.
Yeah, and, like, well, and people are, you know, walking around with the same dirty smock strips. On or something. Right. I mean, it was like just, I'm like, really, Mom? I mean,
gas masks, looking like Blade Runner.
Exactly. And I heard a lot of different things right. like that. You know, people were like, how are you surviving there? I'm like, quite well.
well, we finally got electricity and running water. It's better now. The toilet flushed today. It's great. It's a good day.
Yeah. But, I mean, and it's like that. Even when I go on trips, like for me, and hopefully when we take our child to just different experiences, and obviously we are from a different culture. My dad was born in a different country. He's an immigrant to the U.S. When we go, we like to immerse ourselves in things. To me, that's like 100 times more important on a trip, on a vacation, than it is going to see sites or whatever. Like, the two biggest things I love to do on those trips is nature and outdoors things, and just living in a culture and eating the food and talking to the people and walking around and just
socializing. Yeah, trying to live similarly to how they live right. versus, you know, coming right. over here, you go get, you know, little sleezers and, you know, yeah. six pack.
That's important. So I can't imagine just doing that.
You know, in either country, you can sort of stay in a bubble. Mm-hmm. There are places where you can just exist
right.
and not have too much exposure to another culture.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you can open yourself to other opportunities and travel
right.
or see other places. You know, Singapore is an island. I mean, it's a very small country, relatively speaking, but it, there's still a lot within one place mm-hmm. that you can see and do. And I think that those are the experiences that are, you know, really important. So we were really happy that Ella had the chance to, you know, experience that. Henry was, you know, born and just a couple months old when we were in Singapore. So he was there, and he won't remember it. He'll see it in pictures, you know, like, hey, you know, see, you were there.
Right.
But it does define, you know, who we are as a family. And we did live through that experience, which defined, and also, I would say, the difficulty of having a baby. You know, we were married for 9 years, as I mentioned, and we were married for a couple of years before we had children. But your life changes, mm-hmm. as you guys know, and in a lot of ways, it changes mm-hmm. for the better. Mm-hmm. But it definitely changes to where you're focused on your children. Mm-hmm. And in my case, I don't. I've never spent. I'm the youngest of my siblings, and I never spent time with a baby. Ever. I didn't babysit anybody, and I don't gravitate towards kids, so I'm not really good with children, you know, until I had my own.
Right.
And that's there's a lot of people that are like that.
And I think that it's interesting because when you have your own children, it's, for me anyway, it's 180 degrees. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's also helped me with other people's kids now. Right. It you know, I understand them much better, right. but it's not intuitive. It didn't come naturally, but mm-hmm. with my kids, your heart, and I also thought, you know, well, when a baby is, you know, 6 months old, they don't talk or do anything, so why does it really matter what you say or what you do? Because my, you know, small-mindedness is basically saying, well, you know, it's got to be about what you can interact and do, but then you realize that it's so rewarding for right. you as a dad.
Right.
To hold your 3-month-old, 6-month-old, mm-hmm. whatever, it's an experience you get. And yeah, so I think that was a big eye opener, and you know, an important part about us as a family. So you know, it's been a good thing.
Yeah, and I think, you know, like you said though, not everybody's got those experiences anyways. And there's a lot of it. It's not uncommon. I've heard it more often than not, especially doing the podcast, that I'm great with my kids. They're my kids, but you know, I don't want to do outside of that. I don't feel comfortable, and that's totally fine. I mean, not everybody has to do that. I mean, there's people that are good at that, and
I'm pretty comfortable with kids.
Yeah, you are, but there's not a lot of people are. Not everybody is. Some people are their kids, and that's it.
Those people are freaking monsters.
What?
Relax.
Not necessarily.
It's just a kid. You're not going to break them. It's not in what you're saying. It's how you're saying it.
What?
When you're talking to kids.
Oh,
doesn't
yeah.
What you're well, saying.
Just no, it doesn't, but that comes nice. Naturally to you because you are that type of a person.
Yeah, I'm a big idiot.
Or you're just goofy and people like
I
to
am goofy as all
you.
Hell.
Kids love you. I mean, my daughter was eyeing you when you walked in the house.
Today. I don't know if that was.
Oh, yeah, she was.
She was very suspicious.
I mean, she was, but everybody's suspicious of you, man. Everybody's got the stinky eye on you, man.
They do.
I'm watching
that
you.
Would
do something crazy.
You gotta be wise.
But, you know, so. What is the best experience, do you think, that you had in either of the cultures, either time you spent in either of the places? What was the best experience you think you had raising your kids overseas in a different culture?
Yeah, did you have like an aha moment? You're like, holy jeez, what? This is amazing.
I think, you know, for probably when we were in Singapore, because Ella was a little bit older, mm-hmm. I would say there are two things. One, a unique part of being in Asia, and I don't know if this is the case in Europe as well or South America, but I don't think it's so much so in the U.S., but these places have usually have help. So they'll have a nanny mm-hmm. Or, you know, help that you are able to, you know, hire someone who, you know, works in your home. Either on a temporary basis, in the case of Singapore, it's very popular to have a live-in nanny. And so while we were there, because Henry was just born and because we were not home, I mean, this is a big part about having children when you're overseas. As I said, I mean, you're away from your family. But it's not just that they miss you and you miss them. It's that a lot of times that's your network to help
right.
you.
No, for sure.
Those are people who care the most about,
yeah.
you know, maybe staying with you in the middle of the night during long nights.
Or coming over to watch your kid.
Just coming over yeah. to watch your kid for a couple hours and give you a mm-hmm. breather, and they understand that you need a breather.
Right.
It's not about, you know, oh, I've got 10 things I got to go run errands. It's like, no, I need a nap.
Or I would rather be doing something else than the watching this kid.
Yeah.
And overseas, you wouldn't have that.
You don't have that
support network.
So that was a big part. And their cultures, even in China as well as Singapore, are open to that. And it's very much, I mean, in China, it's a lot more related to family members. You know, they'll be even parents will come and live with the younger parents who have just had a child. They'll live with them at that time, or they have you know, people that they hire and come in and stay with them. So we took advantage of that while we were in Singapore. We hired a nanny, and I think that, you know, there they have a sort of a situation where, from a labor perspective, they're able to have people come in from other countries who have an opportunity to make more money, have a better life, live in a place like Singapore, and also help the parents, because their parents still have to work to, you know, pay for everything. It's it's an expensive place to live. And at the same time, they can raise their families. It's a very interesting way of helping the family unit and the family grow and exist and work well. So we were able to do that. And, you know, that was a huge advantage for us. I think being in Shanghai with Ella, we didn't have anyone necessarily with us. And it was much harder. So I think we did that in Singapore, which was a good thing. And it helped a lot. The other piece, I guess, is just, like I said before, being exposed to different ways of doing things, different ways of living, and different, just, you know, unique perspectives. And so our kids, you know, have that. Ella has that, you know, growing up with other kids that are from different places.
I think having the nanny also would help ease the culture shock, you know, because they're in your home,
right,
helping you out. So if you're making some kind of cultural faux pas, they'd be like, well, you know, you don't really want to do this, or, you know, maybe you should do that.
And I'm curious, when you ask this now, and was your wife working there too?
She didn't.
Okay.
No, she didn't.
So, but my question, and maybe you know this, but you might have an experience, what do you know? Because I know in Europe, in some places, and I don't know if it's everywhere, but I know it's much longer than it is here. What is the, do you know what the typical, maternity leave is for women? I know it's like a year some places in Europe.
Some cool. Scandinavian countries. It's I think Sweden, you get a really long.
And the male does too, gets along, which is yep. pretty cool too, because you get that bonding really time sweet. With your kid.
Yeah, for international companies in China, they tend to follow the international policy, okay. whatever it is, from wherever the country or the country of
origin
for
country,
the yeah. yeah for so for GM, you know, where I work, we.
You get crappy time off.
Yeah, well, for guys, it's sort of there's nothing, but it's sort of up to your manager, which I would say I'm pretty fortunate, and most people are very reasonable.
That's good.
You know, for what's happening, and I think that but it's not enough, mm-hmm. and I think that for, you know, women who are working. The pressure is obviously nothing that I can imagine,
right.
but when I try to imagine it, I think that, you know, as a country, the U.S. is not helpful, does not support the correct way. We don't think of it the right way, and we're not able to sort of have that kind of discussion. I mean, more now than before, but. We don't put the value where it needs to be, and we don't let women go through that experience the way they should.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not good for guys either.
No.
And that's not good for dads either. And it's
right.
not because you don't want to do anything, or you're like, oh, yeah, you have more time, so I can go do whatever I'm going to do. No, it's the family unit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the sanctity, the sanity of your your household that's at stake there, and you really push people to their limits. So I think that that's I will say both China and Singapore were more as a culture, they were more open to having women take more time.
Mm-hmm.
And in China, it's a bit extreme in a way, because it's partially related to the one-child policy from, 1980, that, women are sort of separated, and, you wear special clothes, like a lead smock, so that no radiation or anything is going to affect your baby when, they're in utero, and it permeates through everything. So that level of attention and that level of care, it's like, okay, if you have to take a nap during the day, there's a place you can go take a nap. If you have to go, leave your desk or whatever it is, it's much more conducive. People understand. Whereas here, I think it's sort of people still today, raise an eyebrow, whoa. Why do you, so you're 6 months pregnant. Yeah. Why do you have to go off to a room for an hour? Or what, what do you, I mean, it's an odd pressure that doesn't need to be there.
No, and I agree wholeheartedly. I mean, I think it's important. I think we rush into sending people back to work and emotional states where hormone levels aren't totally there and you're still attaching to your children, even us. I mean, I look back at when I went back to work and I don't feel like I got enough of what I needed to when I was home. And, but especially for women, I think we look at it a little bit backwards, and hopefully that does change, and hopefully it starts to change, because I think we need to pay more attention to what we're doing and how we're raising kids and in our culture, because I think it starts them in an emotional and even sometimes physical stunt by not having that time with the children early on.
Right. I think if the U.S. can keep moving forward with, the attention to detail for, child rearing, that we can eventually get to the point where we're like the Sweden or the Chinese and Singaporean?
Mm-hmm.
Singaporean. Is that right? To get to that level where they care about that time. When you first have a baby, it's important. It's important bonding time. It's important family time to develop that bond with your kid.
And you pin on a good point too, Adam. I think that it's even after birth that you never know how that adjustment is going to happen. Mm-hmm. And the societal pressure, not just from corporations that need or have an obligation or responsibility there, mm-hmm. but also society,
right.
Maybe even more important, coworkers and others who may not have had children or may be young or don't understand that and that underlying pressure that is sort of that thing that's like someone raises an eyebrow or makes a funny look, that's all that it has to be. It's not a policy necessarily or something that's written, and it is everything to do with do I have to go back to work and in 6 weeks, and if I don't, someone's going to think something's wrong with me, mm-hmm. or someone's passing a judgment that's not good for my career or things like that.
Social norms that are given that that are expected.
Yeah, yeah, and that is what should change.
Yeah, no, I 100% wholeheartedly agree. I mean, I know that there's times I look back at when my daughter was born, even for me, and not even from the, I can't speak for other than what my experiences with my wife, and I know that definitely she didn't have enough time, and I think that's kind of the general consensus, but I think with women, I haven't heard many women say, man, I wish I could have gone back to work earlier. But even for me, I look back and go, man, I wish I could get, one more week even, and it's tough. Like you said, I mean, in the back of your mind, you're always, well, what are people thinking? What's going on? And how are people going to judge? Whether it's not even necessarily the workplace, but just around, when you're socializing or whatever, what are they going to say to you about, you know, what you did or how long you took. So kind of closing here a little bit too, I always like to find out, so what's some sort of like fail, not necessarily culturally obviously there, but if you have something like that, that'd be awesome to throw in, but what kind of fail that maybe you experienced as a dad with both kids, either kid, child, that you had that you were like, man, that was dumb and boneheaded, but obviously you learned something crazy from it that you use now and go, well, that's not going to happen again. Do you have anything like that?
Yeah, I think mine is pretty, let's say, it's not a very simple thing, but in the sense that we did a lot while our kids were being born, in that we were moving and we were living in another place. In the case of Henry's birth, we were moving to Singapore. And obviously, 9 months earlier, or let's say 6.5 months earlier, we didn't know we were going to be moving to Singapore. So that wasn't something on our minds. Once we found out, then I sort of had to adjust whatever the plan was, move everything from Shanghai to Singapore. And Amy stayed home during that time. And the plan was eventually they were going to come to Singapore and Henry would be born there. Mm-hmm. He came 6 weeks early. And I was in Shanghai. I had, you know, thank God, already sent everything to Singapore, and I was with five suitcases in a hotel in Shanghai, sort of waiting until I could go back to the U.S. to get them and go to Singapore. And I get a text message while I'm on a conference call. It's 10 a.m. in 10:30 a.m. in Shanghai. It's 10:30 at night in the U.S. And Amy went to emergency labor, which was an emergency situation, and that's a very helpless feeling. Mm-hmm. And thank God, you know, we had good neighbors. Amy had set up a plan with the neighbors, and everybody came to a call of action. And Henry was born basically 5 minutes before midnight on mine and Amy's 8th wedding anniversary. So, which was very interesting, but not planned, obviously. And I got there 24 hours later. So I missed the birth of, I missed Henry's birth. And that you can't get that back, obviously. So that was tough. But I think that's one of the hard things about living overseas or doing something like that. I mean, you run a risk and you know that's there. So that's, you know, if we had other children in the future, obviously that would be something I thought a lot about. And for your listeners, I think that's something, you know, if they have the opportunity to be overseas and they have that situation, it's something to be very mindful of, because, you know, we always think about, hey, life's good, everything's going down the path the way it should. But unexpected things happen. Mm-hmm. And we're very lucky. We're very lucky. Everything worked out okay. But I would say that would be one of those. I think on the flip side, one of the things that I did learn recently, which was a very positive thing, you know, Amy sent an article to me that was about you pay attention to all the firsts of your kids, the first step, the first word, the first tooth, the first whatever, drool. You're interested in that.
The first poop.
The first poop.
It's so magical.
The meconium joy.
Remind me of that.
Didn't Robin Williams say it was like Velcro and like black whatever? And it was awful. Yeah, awful. Just with a side of awful. Yeah. Anyway, but you don't pay attention to the last. And there's always a last for certain things. So there's a last time you're going to change a diaper. There's a last time you're going to give a bottle. There's a last time that someone's going to want to sleep in your bed. And it was really interesting because for me, you know, with our older daughter, she does want to sleep in the bed a lot. And I was always, you're going back upstairs, you know, we're going to nip this in the bud. But I realized that there's going to be a moment when she's not going to want to sleep in the bed anymore. Mm-hmm. And what do I, you know, what is my opportunity? My opportunity is to enjoy whatever the time is for my daughter or my son, you know, pay attention to this isn't going to last forever. And what you sort of, it helped me to embrace something mm-hmm. that I thought was a negative. And, you know, I think that happened a lot when we were overseas as well. You know, you learn different ways of doing things. You see, people should be open to that, you know, be open right. to the fact that just because it's not the way your mind, you know, thinks doesn't mean that it's a wrong way. You know, mm-hmm. there's a lot of ways to do things, and it might even be better. So,
sums it up. That's awesome. Those are great things, and you're right. You're right. I'd love to get that article from you, and if you have it, maybe we'll put it in our show notes, too, so people can get that and read that. That's a cool piece that I think is really important to know about. But so, well, thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure.
Very informative. We'll have to have you back on. If you ever leave the country again, we'll bring you back. Or
I have to leave the country to come back?
No, you don't have to come
back. Get the hell out of here.
You know, we could do this over Skype,
then you
Skype
can come
too.
Back.
No, you can come back. You can join us anytime. Not what I mean.
Happy to.
But if you're over, even Skype while you're there and talk about what's going on or something, it'd be kind of cool.
I've enjoyed it very much. Thanks for the opportunity, Adam.
It's our pleasure to have you in. We look forward to talking.
It's hard to sit
you.
Next to Mike, you know, but terrible. I managed somehow.
Mike's getting his fair share of like breaking in today. We're gonna beat him up a little bit.
That's all right. You can beat me up.
Thank you so much for joining us today. I do have one little added bonus thing here that I want to say. I lost a lot of my email just recently, and I had a listener email me. It wasn't a dad actually, and he wants to give his perspective on why he doesn't have children and share that, which I think would be a really cool thing for people just to hear that side of it. And so that listener, I know you're connected and know some folks involved with our show, but I don't have your email. I think you were friends with Matt, the previous co-host. So if you could send me an email again, and this is for everybody, if you want to send us an email, have a show idea, just have a comment, want to find out some more information, you can email us at experienceanddad@gmail.com, or you can find us on Twitter, DadEXP podcast. That's at DadEXP podcast. So you can find us on those things. And if you get a second, please rate us and review us. That's how we get found, and other people can find us, whether it's on Apple Podcasts or wherever you may get your podcast. We'd love to hear some feedback. The good, bad, whatever. Everything's great. Again, wish Matt well, and hopefully we'll see him in a chair here soon again and join us. And Mike, thank you so much for being here. I look forward to continuing this and having a different added flair. What was it like? Were you good? Was it better last time or why?
No, it's cool. It's cool to come out and chat about just random parenting bullcrap.
Yeah, well, it's good. It's good to do sometimes. So thank you so much for being here, guys. And thanks for joining us, and look forward to more of this in the future. Thanks.
Yeah, awesome.
The Dad Experience.